from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, just to update you, you cannot, at least in the state of California, you cannot avoid jury duty just by getting off the voter rolls. Last week, in my story about being recruited for the Robert Blake jury, I opined that maybe the way to avoid all that nonsense is to just unregister and unvote in the unelection. But several listeners wrote and said, no, not that easy, sir. They also get juror names from the Department of Motor Vehicles. So you must don't vote and don't drive, and don't drive while voting. That's always a good idea. That's good advice from the LeShow people. So you really have to withdraw from modern society to avoid the jury deal. I say, just go in and start spouting hate speech, and they'll kick you out right away. Goodbye to the Hubble Space Telescope. Hubble, we hardly knew ye, but the NASA this week announced, to the horrified reaction, not publicly horrified, but definitely in the loop horrified reaction of NASA scientists, that a mission planned to re-equip and upgrade Hubble. They even have to upgrade Hubble. Has been canceled. They didn't say it was to provide money for the mythical mission to Mars. And who knows anyway, goodbye to the... Now, the thing, of course, is they have to get the Hubble back. They're not going to leave it up there. It's not going to become space junk. They have to spend almost as much money to get the Hubble back as they were going to pay to upgrade it. And it'll probably burn up, but what the hell. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the record business is crying the blues, has been for the last few years, and blaming kids downloading music on the internet. Well, guess who's providing up to 10% of the record business's or the music business's revenue now? Those same kids downloading mobile phone ringtones. Sales of them have jumped 40% in the past year alone to $3.5 billion, according to a study released this week. Worldwide sale of ringtones. This is for those of you who don't know, if you don't want your cell phone to go da 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 da, you can download from the internet the first few notes of your favorite song. The worldwide sale, which started as a marketing gimmick for music labels and mobile phone companies, is roughly equivalent to 10% of the global music market. So, kids will steal from you, and kids will give it back. That's the good news on Hello, Welcome to the Show. Thank you. Please withhold your applause until the entire show is concluded.
Charlie, you're not my Charlie anymore. You're screwing it up. You're killing your soul with an audience looking on. If I hadn't left early last night, I would have made a speech to you. You're not the only one you're going to hurt. If you don't believe, I don't believe in you. If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. It makes it all feel better, does it? It makes you feel like heaven, does it? You loved it and you spent accordingly. You can't afford it now. You can't afford it now. You can't afford it now. You try and you fail. Loving like a little doll. And feed it on the scraps you find. Kiss a while.
lost in a sea. Goodbye now and you pay later. Where's the problem? You can ask if you keep your head up. But the road is long and you're falling asleep at the wheel. There's a girl going crazy about you when I'm not far behind. Do you care about your friends anymore? If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. If you don't believe me, don't believe in you. You loved it and you spent accordingly. Still asleep. Goodbye now and pay later. Goodbye now and you pay later. About you. This girl going crazy about you, and I'm not far, not far behind. My husband right there all along. No more tears and no more sighs and no more fears. I'll say no more goodbyes. If trouble beckons me, I swear I'm gonna refuse. I'm gonna settle down and there'll be no more blues. Every day while I am far away, my thoughts turn homeward, forever homeward. Traveled around the world in search of happiness, but all the happiness I found was in my hometown. No more blues, I'm going back home. No, no more dues, I'm through with all my wandering. Now I'll settle down and never roam and find a man and build a home. When we settle down, there'll be no more blues, nothing but happiness. When we settle down, there'll be no more blues. Thank you. I've traveled around the world in search of happiness, but all the happiness I found was in my hometown. No more blues, I am going back home. No, no, no more dues. I'm through with all my wandering, and now I'll settle down and never roam and find a man and build me a home when we settle down. There'll be no more blues when we settle down. When we settle down, when we settle down, there'll be no more blues. There'll be no more blues.
Thank you so much, but I did tell you to hold your applause. Hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this very edition. I welcome you to all the editions of the show, actually. I'm not just going to welcome you to this one. What the heck? You may be listening to another version right now. You may be listening to somebody else's show. I welcome you to that. I welcome you to Car Talk, for crying out loud. Ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. The bubble still exists. The bubble's alive and well. A U.S. Army attack on the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad. This was last spring. Oh, ancient history. A U.S. Army attack on the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad that killed two journalists was the result of, quote, criminal negligence, unquote, according to international media watchdog Reporters Sans Frontières. French name. Yeah, me too. In a report published this week, Reporters Sans Frontières called for the reopening of a U.S. Army inquiry into the shelling of the hotel, which was considered a media safe house and the base for most foreign journalists in the capital during the Gulf War. Gulf War II, that is. The attack left two journalists dead, a cameraman for Reuters and a reporter for the Spanish TV station Telecinco. Telecinco. It injured many others. It led to a media outcry at the time. Spanish journalists snubbed a visit by the foreign minister of Britain to Madrid shortly afterwards. The U.S. at the time admitted it had opened fire on the hotel, but said it had come under attack from snipers. That account has been dismissed as absurd by journalists who worked in the building. Sky News correspondent David Chater, part of the Rupert Murdoch family, he saw the tank direct its gun barrel at the hotel, says he was staggered that it fired despite knowing it was the de facto press center for the Western media in Baghdad. According to Reporters Sans Frontières, the real cause of the tragedy was that soldiers in the field were never told the hotel was full of journalists. Quote, it is inconceivable that the massive presence of journalists at the hotel for 3 weeks prior to the shelling, which was known by any TV viewer and by the Pentagon itself, could have passed unnoticed. Yet this presence was never mentioned to the troops in the field or marked on the maps used by artillery support soldiers. The question is whether this information was withheld deliberately, out of contempt, or through negligence. The watchdog accused American authorities of initially lying about what happened. Well, that's instinct. Before exonerating the U.S. Army of any blame in an official statement 4 months later. Pentagon officials first claimed the tank had fired in response to enemy fire. Later, they changed, saying the soldiers who fired the fatal shell were seeking to neutralize an Iraqi spotter. The media watchdog group with the French name said the U.S. government must bear some of the responsibility for what happened because leaders make false statements over the incident. Ari Fleischer had warned the media to leave Baghdad before the war unless they were embedded. Hey, I'm embedding you, Ari. I'm embedding you right here, okay? Further evidence that British forces were ill-equipped to fight the Iraq war emerged this week after it was established that the pilots of two helicopters that crashed in midair did not have night vision goggles. Hey, we had them, didn't we? I think we did. Six Royal Navy officers and one U.S. serviceman were killed when their two Sea Kings, flying in darkness, collided head-on only a few hundred yards from the aircraft carrier HMS Ark Royal. British Navy policy is not to issue night vision goggles. This comes amid a growing scandal over the death of Sergeant Steve Roberts. He's a Brit. He was killed after being told to surrender his body armor. Neither of the pilots in the Sea Kings had been issued with night vision equipment, even though they had to fly at very low levels on nighttime missions. The Royal Navy now admits that its longstanding policy could have cost the men their lives. There may be a flight safety requirement to issue night vision goggles, a senior Navy official said. The families of the British casualties are understood to be furious about the circumstances of the accident. Fatal shortcomings to the British military supply chain have been exposed over the death of Sergeant Roberts. He was shot dead 3 days after being ordered to hand over his protective body armor to another soldier because of shortages. Apparently they have enough stuff, but they don't know how to ship it there. We do. We're good at that. We're very good at logistics, ladies and gentlemen. So be glad you're not the British. But now this was inside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It actually made some media coverage in this country and almost as quickly disappeared more quickly than Paul O'Neill's book. That was a 2-day story. This was a half day story. And the interesting thing to me is that even the candidates who are buffing their anti-war credentials or their anti-this war credentials in the Democratic primaries didn't. I haven't seen every speech, of course. I don't have a life, but I haven't seen every speech. But they don't seem to have picked up on this. So what? Why is this radioactive? Quotes. You know, I'm just reading the story. I'm not quoting anything yet. A scathing new report published by the Army War College, those notorious left-wing anti-war activists, that's my interpolation for humorous effect, broadly criticizes the Bush administration's handling of the war on terrorism, accusing it of taking a detour into an unnecessary war in Iraq and pursuing an unrealistic quest against terrorism that may lead to U.S. wars with states that pose no serious threat. The report by Jeffrey Ricord, a visiting professor at the Air War College, warns that as a result of those mistakes, the Army is, quote, near the breaking point, unquote. Now, I floated this theory last week that we picked on the weakest country to attack, to send a message to the stronger countries. Ooh, look out. But, you know, if you were Syria, why would you be scared of the United States of this? I mean, aside from the United States just moving the troops that are in Iraq over the border, we could do that. But in terms of, like, mounting a big new campaign, we kind of have blown the wad, haven't shot the wad. Blew something else, but we shot the wad. And we don't have enough money to fix the Hubble telescope. Back to the report from the Army War College. It recommends scaling back the scope of the global war on terrorism and instead focusing on the narrower threat posed by Al-Qaeda. The global war on terrorism, quoting now, as currently defined and waged, is dangerously indiscriminate and ambitious, and accordingly its parameters should be readjusted. It's strategically unfocused, promises more than it can deliver. Isn't that politics, sir? Isn't that government? Isn't that America? Isn't that business? And threatens to dissipate U.S. military resources in an endless and hopeless search for absolute security. Ricord is a veteran defense specialist and author of 6 books on military strategy. Was an aide to then-Senator Sam Nunn when he was chairman of the Armed Services Committee. His essay is published by the Army War College's Strategic Studies Institute. Retired Army Colonel Douglas Lovelace, director of the Strategic Studies Institute, hardly distances himself from the report. I think that the substance that Jeff brings out in the article really, really needs to be considered. That's 2 reallys from an Army colonel. They're very stingy with their reallys. Publication of the essay was approved by the Army War College's commandant. The top Pentagon spokesman, Larry Derrida, not Joe's brother, not Curly Joe's brother, said he had not read the study. He said, if the conclusion is that we need to be scaling back in the global war on terrorism, it's not likely to be on my reading list anytime soon. That's a quote. That's an open-minded approach from the Pentagon spokesman. Many of Ricord's arguments, such as the contention that Saddam's Iraq was deterred and did not present a threat, have been made by critics of the administration. Iraq, he concludes, quote, was a war of choice distraction from the war of necessity against Al-Qaeda, unquote. But it's unusual to have such views published by the War College. His core criticism is the administration is biting off more than it can chew. He likens the scale of U.S. ambitions in the war on terrorism to Adolf Hitler's overreach in World War II. A cardinal rule of strategy, he says, is to keep your enemies in a manageable number. The Germans were defeated in two world wars because their strategic ends outran their available means. He also scoffs at the administration's policy of seeking to transform and democratize the Middle East. The potential payoff of a democratic and prosperous Middle East, if there is one, almost certainly lies in the very distant future, he writes. The basis on which this democratic domino theory rests has never been explicated, unquote. He also cast doubt on whether the U.S. government will maintain its commitment to the war. The political, fiscal, and military sustainability of the global war on terrorism, which he now calls the GWOT, the GWAT, remains to be seen, he said. He says the United States should scale back its ambitions in Iraq and be prepared to settle for a friendly autocracy rather than a genuine democracy. Hey, my bet's on that. I'll tell you, Jeffrey, we're going to get that. We're going to get we'll get half of that. Friendly autocracy. Wasn't that what Saddam Hussein was? Way back when he was our friend? He was a friendly. So we've done all this to replace one friendly autocracy with another. But, you know, a better one. Much better one. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's news from inside and outside the bubble. Some of you may have known it. Some of you may not have. I just think it's cute. It's cute when the Army War College sounds like Howard Dean. And now, ladies and gentlemen, sounds more like Howard Dean than Howard Dean sounds. Tales of Airport Security. Dear Harry, while planning our annual Christmas trip to Canada, to visit family, I called United Airlines to ask what kind of documentation would be required to travel with our new baby. We hadn't yet received the birth certificate from the state of California, but we did have a proof of birth document from the hospital and the baby's social security card. Yes, the federal government had actually worked faster than the state government. Despite these documents, the customer service agent informed me that we would be unable to travel by air to Canada and back without a birth certificate for our infant. I assumed the concern was infant smuggling, so I pressed him for the reason that our other documents were inadequate. I was informed that it was a security issue. He explained that people could smuggle things inside dead infants, which can appear to be just sleeping when, quote, kept warm with chemicals. Unquote. Setting aside that it sounded like a scenario Tom Clancy might have written in junior high, how would the presence of a birth certificate assure that my sleeping infant was not, in fact, dead and stuffed with explosives? If the concern is really the sneaking of baby corpses onto planes, wouldn't a more sensible security strategy simply be to prod sleeping babies to see if they wake up, birth certificate or no? However, if airport security institutes a policy of prodding only sleeping babies, They will leave the traveling public vulnerable to the threat posed by terrorists turned taxidermists who could make explosive-packed dead babies appear awake with the aid of chemicals to keep them warm, of course. We ended up flying north and renting a car to drive over the border. On the return domestic flight, we were selected for additional screening, during which I was directed to hold up my baby so she could be patted down by airport security. When I objected, I was told, "It's just policy, ma'am." I didn't get a reply when I asked what security concern was being addressed by this policy of infant pat-downs. Perhaps they were checking to see if I was traveling with a dead baby. Learning something new every day, ladies and gentlemen, on Tales of Airport Security copyrighted feature. Now, closely related, dear Harry, writes Judith, another Judith, I know you tell tales of airport security on this show, but I just had to tell you about the security at the Los Angeles City Hall. There are two city halls. The west one is the one we all know. That's the one you've seen on Dragnet. City Hall East is across the street from it, across Los Angeles Street, as a matter of fact. To get to the upper floors of City Hall East, you show your driver's license and get a name tag. No big deal. This Friday, after I left City Hall East, I had to use the restroom and decided to use one in the main City Hall. I crossed Los Angeles Street, had my wallet with the driver's license ready, walked in, and stopped dead. It was like the airport. Empty your pockets, take off your watch, everything on the conveyor through the X-ray. Somehow I buzzed the walkthrough screener and had to be wanded. All right, I got all my stuff back, took the elevator to the third floor, walked around the rotunda, used the restroom. When I came out of the restroom, I went into the rotunda again and saw a person coming in from doors on the west side of the building, the Spring Street side, opposite the side where the other city hall is. No security. No walkthrough screening machine. Nothing. I went to the door to see if there was security outside the doors. Nothing. No security past the rotunda at the elevators. Anyone could come in from Spring Street. They have to walk up steps and go anywhere in the building. So I left through the Spring Street doors and went out to spend the rest of my day. How weird is this? Total security on the east side. Nothing on the west side. Says this listener, who admits to being confused. I believe intelligence indicates all threats come from the east. Just surfers on the west side.
Every time I hear that mellow saxophone. understand.
This is Le Show, and one of this week's ironies, and I do irony, is that the judge presiding over the arraignment in the Michael Jackson case advised the defendant this week at the arraignment on Friday, advised his attorney, actually, to advise the defendant to restrict his intake of fluids. Now, I thought the trial was about, you know, did the judge get it backwards or what? No, actually, he was just perturbed because Mark Garagos was asking for a bathroom break within an hour or an hour and a half of the session starting, which it started late anyway, because the bad traffic in Santa Maria, the giant metropolis of Santa Maria, the gridlock in the Santa Maria Metroplex. So the judge was a little testy to begin with. Oh, there we go again. Anyway, you may have noticed that it got a bit of news coverage on Friday, just a bit. And every lawyer known to man is going to be involved in this case before it's over. And much speculation now as to whether they're going to try to get a change of venue. Like, you could find a place where people wouldn't have an opinion, where people wouldn't know about this case. Well, you know, if they wait long enough, that manned moon mission, have it up there. Have them really do a moonwalk. See what I'm saying? It all works. Just delay it a few decades. The arraignment being over, minions of Michael Jackson passed out invitations to people in the crowd, that crowd that somehow materialized from around the world. People really do have too much money everywhere in the world, don't they? Or maybe not. Anyway, minions of Michael Jackson materialized, handing out printed invitations to a party. You know, the post-arraignment on sexual molestation of a child charges party. The one you usually have after you've been arraigned for 9 counts of child molestation charges. Carry a felony sentence if you're convicted. That party at Neverland with complete driving instructions from Santa Maria to Neverland. Now, this is a guy who has, for good and sufficient reason, valued his privacy. And you can bet, of course, that the copies of these invites have now sprung up all over the internet. So everybody in the world now who cares knows how to get to Neverland, which would seem to reify at least one thing Michael Jackson said on 60 Minutes, which is explaining why he has now rented a house in Beverly Hills, that he'll go back to Neverland to visit, but it will never be his home anymore. Peter Pan has flown the coop.
you never land again.
Todo canto que eu faço é teu. Se descombina eu vou me embora e não consola mais esse breu. A lua nasce tem tantos anos, quanto engano já doeu. O beija-flor em nossa janela, buscando o doce que você deu. A samambaia está sempre bela, pelos cuidados que recebeu. Lá vem Cristina, com seu passinho manso, popoto, contrariado, desafinando todo cuidado. Amam-se muito, mas não vai bem esse casamento. Haja um aguento, que cure a sorte, estão no momento que a convivência já tá criando tanto fandango, mando e desmando, inoperando todo o engano. Para Cristina, o popoto só toca viola, até da bola, mas nenhuma no gol. Deixa Cristina de inventar caraminhola, chega de hora, se desenrola, fala de mim pra todo mundo. Dinheiro, teu amigo sou eu. Deixa a menina minha viola, que todo canto que eu faço é teu. Se descombina eu vou me embora e não consola mais esse breu. A lua nasce tem tantos anos, quanto engano já doeu. O beija-flor em nossa janela, buscando o doce que você deu. A samambaia está sempre bela, pelos cuidados que recebeu. E assim Cristina foi conformando um pouco o popoto, cabeceando, deixou o seu rostinho brincando. Todo domingo escutam um chorinho na feira, e sem brigueira os seus carinhos foram voltando. De vez em quando pratica uma briguinha de galo, e no intervalo o tempo vai marcando a folhinha. E assim a rinha não incomoda mais a vizinha. Na vida deles ninguém mete a colher. Para popoto de quisira, de fiola, de rame-rame, de rasga-bola. Para nenhum é bom a vida que esfola, erra de mim embora se violar.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the apologies of the week. It's a regular feature. Why not?
We're so sorry.
No, I can think of a million reasons, but we press on. Standing before a large group of skeptical Democratic women. Ooh. Tough crowd. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer. Lockyer. Apologized Friday night for describing allegations that Arnold Schwarzenegger had sexually harassed several women before he became governor as, quote, frat boy behavior. Anyone that I offended, I apologize to, Lockyer told more than 300 women gathered for the state Democratic convention. It was the wrong choice of words, and I recognize that. He may run for governor in 2006, may Lockyer. He came under fire for fellow Democrats since he admitted last fall that he voted for Schwarzenegger. At that time, he downplayed as misguided frat boy behavior allegations that Schwarzenegger had groped or mistreated nearly two dozen women. I frankly screwed up and used the wrong language the wrong way, said Lockyer, who was briefly booed and jeered after mentioning his vote for Schwarzenegger. He said he had no regrets about voting for Schwarzenegger. So he's got more apologies to come, one would think. First, for using the word screwed. A Bank of England memo branded victims of its biggest ever scandal as WOGs. That's a bad word in England. The bank was forced to make a humiliating apology for the note written by a senior official. The 1978 memo emerged during evidence into the $15 billion collapse of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. The Bank of England is being sued for $1.5 billion over its handling of the disaster. The explosive memo was sent from the bank to banking supervisors around the world. The draft carries the handwritten note criticizing some of the jargon used in the memo, describing it as, quote, bankies, which might puzzle the odd wog, unquote. A Bank of England spokesman said, "This is totally unacceptable. That sort of language would never be used in the modern Bank of England," unquote. No, 1978. Way back there. After nearly a decade of fighting, Frank Zappa's widow has won a legal battle with a Quebec furniture company. Gail Zappa appeared in a Quebec city court, that's a big sacrifice, to follow up on a claim she filed in 1998. Immeublement Tanque used bits of Zappa's Watermelon and the Easter Hay, which appeared on his Joe's Garage album, in two different television commercials in 1995. Mrs. Zappa's suit claimed that the use of the song not only violated copyright infringement, but also argued the song was distorted, mutilated, or otherwise modified. The company and its owner, Jacques Tanque, have settled out of court. Both parties have not disclosed how much cash. The company also publicly apologized to Mrs. Zappa and the four Zappa children, Moon, Unit, Dweezil, Ahmet, and Diva. The company admitted to using the song, although they claimed they didn't realize the use constituted copyright infringement. And they apologized for causing any emotional stress to the Zappas. Gail Zappa is overjoyed by the decision, but she said there were many other copyright battles she needs to fight. An airport executive has apologized to members of a local union for suggesting they may have been responsible for the shooting death of his dog. In a letter faxed to the union, Duluth, Minnesota International Airport Authority Executive Director Brian Reichs said he regretted making the statement. Reichs' golden retriever, Abby, was found bleeding from the head in her kennel December 30th. A veterinarian told the family the dog had been shot twice. Todd Erickson, a spokesman for hotel employees and restaurant employees, Local 99, called the apology a step in the right direction, but it doesn't make it go away. What he did was slanderous. Erickson said, "We're still considering legal action against him. There were no leads or conclusive information to work with, and the shooting investigation is at a scandal." Contract negotiations between the airport and the union had been heated, and it included threats, so Reich suspected the union membership was behind the shooting. He expressed his suspicions in a letter to airport authority directors. British Secretary Geoffrey Hoon is staving off calls for his resignation over the death of Sergeant Stephen Roberts, who died because of a lack of body armor. Hoon said he was extremely sorry about the death, but refused to accept responsibility. That's very nice. "I am extremely sorry that Sergeant Roberts died," he told the BBC. "I am also extremely sorry that Sergeant Roberts did not have the enhanced body armor. It is something ministers," that is to say, cabinet ministers, "wanted to happen. Indeed, we're assured that 36,000 sets of body armor were sent for that purpose." But his attempts to portray Sergeant Roberts' lack of body armor as an isolated problem suffered a setback when it emerged that none of the members of the 7th Armored Brigade had body armor when it crossed the border into Iraq. The shortages of medical equipment were also reported to have forced surgeons to amputate the leg of a soldier. Hoon doesn't say if he's very sorry about that. American Airlines has issued an apology to Brazil after a pilot who flew from Miami to Sao Paulo made an offensive gesture while passing through security. Pilot Dale Hirsch, who's from Coral Springs, Florida, gave the finger to the security camera on Wednesday. The gesture offended Brazilian authorities, who arrested and fined Hirsch $12,700. American Airlines paid the fine and was given in lieu of a 2-year prison sentence. Hirsch has repeatedly apologized since the incident. Thursday, the airline said, "American Airlines regrets any misunderstanding that occurred when the crew of Flight 907 was being processed for entry to Brazil. American Airlines apologizes to the Brazilian government, the airport authorities, the police, or anyone else who perceived anything they believe to have been disrespectful. American continues to look into the matter." That's a broad-ranging apology, ladies and gentlemen. That's a big one. All right, let's go to the videotape. Paul O'Neill's book came out this week, in which he charged that Bush was inattentive, uncurious, had planned the Iraqi war from the beginning of the administration, and then sort of pulled back from many of those charges that he'd made on 60 Minutes when he appeared on the Today program with Katie Couric. The Bush administration wasted no time in announcing an investigation a lot quicker than they decided to investigate the leak of the CIA agent's name last summer, an investigation the morning after 60 Minutes, because 60 Minutes showed a document which said it was secret. So they were going to investigate Paul O'Neill's access and leaking secret documents. Apparently, the document in question has been available thanks to the conservative watchdog group Judicial Watch since last July, titled Foreign Suitors for Iraqi Oil Contracts. was obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. CBS spokesman Kevin Tedesco said CBS simply showed a cover sheet that alluded to a secret document but didn't show any actual secret documents during the telecast. So it wasn't really a secret document on CBS after all. They were just hyping a public document with a cover sheet that called it secret. The U.S. administrator in Iraq, Paul Bremer, L. Paul Bremer, to you, is on his way to the United Nations Monday to meet with Kofi Annan to ask the U.N. to get back involved with Iraq. Because we got these elections that we're trying to stage manage. We want them to be actually caucuses to turn. We need somebody to turn over sovereignty to so we can skedaddle out of there. We want caucuses. The chief Shiite cleric in Iraq, Ayatollah Sistani, insists on direct elections. So Paul Bremer is going to Kofi Annan to say, help, please help me. And the Bush administration has announced that they will rescind their ruling against Germany, France, and Russia bidding on contracts in Iraq, just to help the UN thing along. Do you hear a phone ringing?
Fundraising Eagle. Hey, 43. Secret Service getting a little literal with their code name. 41 doing all right. Yeah. Managed to scrape Paul O'Neill's road apples off my boots without too much to do. Fella made me mad turning on you like that. Well, you know, son, hate does sound like an old timer here. Hey, you've earned the right. Yeah. But there used to be. But there used to be a certain etiquette about these things, you know. You work for a president, you don't turn around and put out a book that cuts him off at the knees, tell fellas had a chance to run for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
Just a more civil way of doing things, I suppose.
Yeah, well, like Condi says when Colin Powell brings up a UN, you know, you're talking old school.
Mm. Yes, so.
I think we brushed him back from the plate a little bit. You know, St. Pauli girl never could take the heat.
Who's that?
Used to call him St. Pauli girl, you know, after the beer.
Right.
But that blind man in a room full of deaf people, geez, what's he going to do next? Use the C word?
Communist?
Cripple. Oh. But look here, wouldn't a blind man hear the deaf people better than they could hear each other, even if they weren't deaf?
You mean because of the compensating?
Sure, the compensation.
Yeah, I suppose so. Mm-hmm. But look here, Sprout, never want to get tangled up in your business, you know that.
I appreciate that more than words can't describe.
But we...
Oh, here we go. Here's 41 rewriting history before it even happens.
Well... Look, you're going to the UN for help in refining the Iraqi elections process. I think that's a fine idea.
Hey, 41, always expected we'd be doing some refining in Iraq as well as drilling.
Just wonder if you're sending the right guy to do the job is all.
The Bremster?
Mm.
He's as tough as nails on the head. He's been juggling Chalabi, Talabani, Sistani.
Sounds like John Gotti's law firm.
Yeah. But no, sir, the Bremster can jet in from Baghdad, go up to New York, see the coffee man.
Kofi Annan.
Make our case and still not need an Ambien until he hits the sack that night. I mean, this fellow's been knocking those Iraqi heads together for almost a year now. You know, persuading those cheese eaters at the UN will be like selling candy to a baby.
Just think you've got a better man for the job. Sitting right there in Washington, doesn't need to fly in from Baghdad.
Ramadan?
Who's
Rumsfeld?
Oh, no, sir. Colin, he's your flicking Secretary of State, 43.
Yeah.
Convincing Kofi Annan to let the UN do some of the heavy lifting on the election didn't right up his alley. Something very wrong with the alley.
Don't get me wrong. I agree. Colin's a good man. Who's made a good contribution to this policy, but and he himself would tell you this, we were getting word back from the cheese eaters that they thought after his speech last February, he might have used up a little bit of his credulity. You know, the Bremster walks in there with a clean slate of hands.
Yeah, well, you've obviously got a problem with this Ayatollah Sistani wanting direct elections.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just so happens his folks are in the majority.
The Shiites. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hey, you know what works for me? I haven't put a hyphen in that word. Otherwise, when I'm skimming the briefings, it just looks like somebody's using an obscenity.
Bremer's been the bad cop with the Ayatollah. Colin might be able to come in as good cop.
Yeah.
You know, getting anyone to agree that caucuses are better than elections is difficult, even in Iowa, so...
Sir, look, I know where this is going. What you really want is Lord High Jim Baker to Bigfoot in and get the credit for bringing the UN back into the game.
Yeah, not this time, Sprout. I owe Bake so big time for getting him on the debt forgiveness account. You know, he's got a legal practice to maintain. You don't do that by lunching with government financial guys in Paris.
No, you do it by lunching with corporate financial types in Houston. I know that. It's just
telling you, nobody at the UN blames Colin for that speech. You know, they know he was on prompter.
401, thanks for the suggestion. I'm going to put it with all the good ideas Paul O'Neill came up with.
Hey, just saying, agree with the goal. Got to get out of Iraq before the convention, or else that mission completed sign is a complete waste of money. Just think there's an argument for leaving diplomacy to the diplomats.
Isn't that the same argument for leaving Iraq to the Iraqis?
Don't think so, but you're in one of those moods where nobody can tell you anything. So, look, just be careful, 43. One thing you really don't want to have to deal with this year is Colin's book.
41, give my love to Mom and Jeb.
Will do. Tragedy about the Fast House.
Yeah. Maybe something good will happen for them late in the second term.
Yeah, hope so, 43.
You take good care, 41.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week the Bush administration announced they want to spend more than $1 billion teaching basically low-income people how to be married better. Yes, they did. That would pay to fix the Hubble telescope. Why don't they send some low-income people, married people, up to fix the Hubble telescope? That, you know, because work together really helps a marriage. This concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, and around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshear.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like getting $1 billion to help my marriage if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists, usually at harryshear.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.